I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, cross-examination. The star witness is back on the stand in the hush money trial of former President Donald Trump. We have the latest. Ready for deliveries. The U.S. military finishes an important project in the Middle East. How it could help humanitarian efforts in Gaza. Putin in China. Analysis of the Russian president's visit to the communist country and what it means for the United States. And a wave to the Virgin Mary. See a swimming instructor's unique project devoted to the Blessed Virgin. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, former President Donald Trump speaks out on day 18 of his hush money trial in New York City. Today at the courthouse in Manhattan, Trump called the case against him a disgrace, a sham, and a scam. And he said the judge is highly conflicted. He also pointed to poll numbers he said are through the roof. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Tracy, former President Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty. He's facing 34 felony counts. It's, of course, the first ever criminal trial of a former U.S. president. Today, the prosecutor's star witness was back in the proverbial hot seat.
As he heads into court, his attorney by his side, former President Donald Trump, says the presidential polls show good news.
One just came out way up in North Carolina, way up in Georgia, way up in Nevada, way up in Arizona. Overall, way up, leading by 5, 6, 7 points.
And he lamented the fact he's once again stuck in front of a judge and jury.
I'd like to be in these various states where I should be. Campaigning like anybody else. This is a Biden trial. This all comes out of the White House and the Department of Justice. This is all them.
In court, Donald Trump's lawyers pressing former attorney Michael Cohen on his criminal history and past lies, working to convince jurors not to believe the star witness's pivotal testimony. Defense lawyers painting Trump's fixer-turned-foe as a spurned former employee. Outside court, lawmakers from Capitol Hill supporting the former president.
I think that it's pretty clear to us that this is a sham trial. It's being done for political purposes, and that just should not stand in the United States of America.
It is corrupt lawfare. It's the Biden prosecutions, and Biden, you're going to lose this election cycle.
Prosecutors trying to prove Trump schemed to suppress a damaging story he feared would torpedo his 2016 presidential campaign and then falsified business records to cover it up.
This isn't justice. This is politics. It's political warfare. And we see it happening in third world countries all over the world. I never thought I'd see it happening in the United States of America.
And former President Trump heads to Minnesota tomorrow for a campaign fundraiser. Tickets start at $500 and go much higher. It's a state no Republican presidential candidate has won since Richard Nixon way back in 1972. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the White House takes aim at recent comments made by Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker at a graduation last weekend for a Catholic college in Kansas. The Super Bowl winner criticized President Biden's, quote, bad policies and poor leadership, and also for being Catholic and supporting abortion. Today, the White House responded.
Look, the president's not going to back away from supporting women and reproductive rights, reproductive health care. It is important to do that. It is important to fight for all of our freedoms. And that's what you're seeing the president do. He's not going to back away from that.
Well, historic day in New York on Wall Street as the Dow passes 40,000 for the first time. By mid-morning, the Dow rose 114 points. It closed just slightly lower at 39,869. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ also were slightly higher on Thursday. All three indexes set records yesterday. Well, the White House Judiciary Committee has voted to move forward with an effort to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress. This is one of two Republican-led House panels investigating the AG. Lawmakers say that they are pursuing this because the Department of Justice refused to hand over audio tapes from President Joe Biden's interviews with a special counsel last year. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now to sort it all out. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. The DOJ has steadfastly denied access to the Robert Hur audio tapes, arguing that turning over these tapes would endanger future prosecutions. Just hours ago, the White House claims that the audio tapes come under executive privilege. And Attorney General Merrick Garland said the committee's request for the tapes was not justified.
We have gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure that the committees get responses to their legitimate requests. But this is not one. To the contrary, this is one that would harm our ability in the future to successfully pursue sensitive investigations.
Prior to the hearing, lawmakers spoke out.
Why did they come to this determination that the president should be just simply let off the hook when it comes to these classified documents? So I have great concerns about the transparency in relationship to the whole issue.
The only reason they want the tapes is so they can cut and paste and give false impressions as to what the president actually said.
You may recall Herr investigated Biden over his handling of classified documents and concluded although the former vice president did improperly keep classified documents after leaving office in 2016, no criminal charges were warranted. The DOJ released a 345-page transcript of the hours-long interviews. Judiciary Committee Chair Congressman Jim Jordan tells me the White House has a track record of changing transcripts.
We know the White House is willing to change the transcripts from what's said because we saw this a few weeks ago when Joe Biden's reading at a press event and he says the word pause, but when you get the transcript, the word pause is not in the transcript.
Democrats say Republicans would use the tapes to help get President Trump elected.
Republicans on this committee have moved from being the criminal defense firm for the president to being essentially an adjunct of the president's media advertising firm. They want the video for Donald Trump's campaign commercials.
So what's next? Because the Department of Justice won't bring any charges, the Oversight and Judiciary Committees will likely sue Merrick Garland and the DOJ in civil court for failing to turn over the audio tapes. There's a good chance that the whole case will be stalled until the end of this Congress. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the Prime Minister of Slovakia is said to be in stable but serious condition following yesterday's assassination attempt. The Interior Minister says the police will take action if anyone publicly endorses the attempted killing.
I say this to everyone, especially to all the masters of the world behind the keyboard, that we will act firmly and uncompromisingly. This is the message from the Interior Ministry and the police service. Therefore, let them think very carefully about whether it is right to threaten someone's death behind a keyboard or to publicly endorse the assassination of the Prime Minister of the Slovak Republic.
Well, authorities say they have one suspect in custody and believe the motive was political. Church leaders are also responding. The Archbishop of Kelsey's says in part, quote, I condemn the violence, hatred and aggression, which only breeds further evil and deepens the polarization in society. Our Russian President Vladimir Putin is in China for an official state visit with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Putin was warmly greeted by Xi and other Chinese officials. He thanked China for its support and proposal to end the war in Ukraine. The meeting is seen as a reaffirmation of the No Limits Partnership Pact signed back in 2022. And here now with analysis of Putin's two-day trip to China is Stephen Sestanovich, Senior Fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Stephen, welcome back. Good to have you on. I want to start out by asking you, what led to Russia's president making this official visit to China?
Well, you know, a jokey answer is he's not welcome in a lot of other places. So a Chinese invitation is hard to turn down. He also wants to consolidate Chinese support for what he's doing in Ukraine, and that in particular in economic and technical terms. Chinese have provided a lot of chips that are valuable in the military effort. They've increased trade with Russia 26% this year. It's also a chance for, you know, dictators to get together and share their rhetoric about what they're doing in the world. Putin claimed they're affirming the need for justice and democratic principles of world order.
And I know the U.S. has expressed its disapproval of Chinese support for Russia in the war in Ukraine. Has China responded to that criticism?
Well, the Chinese, as I've said, have increased trade. They've increased technical assistance. They have been responsive to American concerns on a couple of points. They claim they haven't provided lethal weapons for the Russians to use in Ukraine. And they've also seemed a little nervous about Putin's nuclear rhetoric. The impression we have is that they've sort of tried to tone down the Russian threats about using nuclear weapons. By the way, they've also rhetorically limited their support for Putin. You mentioned that it's a reaffirmation of the No Limits Partnership. Chinese always emphasize they don't use that term anymore, and they haven't used it since the war started. So there's a certain kind of backing away from Putin.
Yeah, and Stephen, we're almost out of time, but what does China get out of this pact? I mean, we talked a little bit about what Russia is gaining, but what about China?
China gets some economic benefits. They get discounted oil and gas because the Russians don't have a market for it in Europe anymore. And they get a very dependent partner. Putin, as I said, doesn't have a lot of other places to turn. He's China's junior sidekick now.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much for your time and for weighing in. Always appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, now to the war in the Middle East, where the Israeli defense minister says the military will send more troops into Rafah. The UN says that since last week, around 600,000 people have been driven out of Rafah. Israel says its forces have killed 100 militants since the offensive began. South Africa is pleading with the United Nations to halt the military operation. They fear Gaza is, quote, being wiped off the map. A much-needed humanitarian aid may begin flowing into Gaza in the next few days. The U.S. military announced they have finished installing a floating pier, which is now anchored to a beach in Gaza. President Biden ordered the construction 2 months ago to help starving Palestinians. Israeli forces have put heavy restrictions on border crossings, which have prevented food and other supplies from getting into Gaza. And for more on this, let's bring in retired Vice Admiral Robert Murat. He is the Deputy Director at Syracuse University Institute for Security Policy and Law, as well as a Professor of Practice Public Administration and International Affairs. Quite a long title there. Always great to see you. First, this seems like a very complicated logistical operation. Sir, can you give us some information on how this is going to work?
It's complicated, but I mean, it's complicated for good reasons, given the environment and what we call JLOTS, the Joint Logistics Over the Shore System. I guess just to start with the fundamentals, and as many of you may know, it's basically in three parts. It starts with all the logistics hub that we have, which is on Cyprus, there in the eastern Mediterranean, which is where the warehouses and most of the food and other supplies are being put together for forwarding to Gaza. And also of interest, the Israelis are there to inspect the goods before they leave Cyprus. The second stop is a floating pier, which is a very large pier capable of having fairly large ships alongside, which is around 4 miles or so offshore. It's actually some distance offshore from Gaza. And that is a transfer point for to the third part of this puzzle, which is called a floating causeway pier, which is a causeway that actually goes to the beach, which was anchored earlier today, as you may have seen in the news, which is connected to the shore in Gaza, and some smaller, what are called logistics support vessels, shuttle the larger supplies that are on that floating dock, which is around 4 miles offshore, to the floating causeway, and then trucks take it ashore for delivery to others without any U.S. people ashore for relief supplies for Gaza.
Yeah, quite a feat there. You know, a big question on everybody's mind is security. And, you know, just last month, seven workers from World Central Kitchen were killed by Israeli airstrikes. There's also the struggle to keep the aid out of the hands of Hamas. Is there anything the U.S. can do about that?
We won't have anybody ashore to supervise that. They're made it very clear. In fact, I saw another interview with the deputy commander of U.S. Central Command earlier today, in which he made it very clear that there will be no U.S. forces ashore But in that environment, nothing is going to be totally safe. And as you know, U.S. forces have been engaged because of attacks that have taken place for a variety of reasons indirectly related to Gaza. Most recently, about 2 weeks ago, in a furious attack that also involved U.S. ships, which are in the eastern Mediterranean, taking down ballistic missiles, which are being fired by the Iranians. So it is a contested environment. I think we're taking all the necessary precautions. I've heard and seen a lot of credible reports that there is security being provided by U.S. personnel, for example, at the floating pier and other locations, but not ashore. So you try to limit exposure as much as you can. But it is, as we say, it's a dangerous place.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on again. We really appreciate it. God bless.
Okay. Best wishes.
I have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including alarming trend. Birth rates are dropping to disturbingly low totals. We take a look inside the numbers and a report from Rome with a rare glimpse of the Vatican's gardens open this month in honor of Our Lady. Welcome back. The Supreme Court denied a pro-life pregnancy center's appeal to keep its donor list and other correspondence private. The state attorney general requested the information, saying that there are concerns over the center's statements about abortion pill reversals. The First Choice Christian Ministry said the request violated its rights under the First and 14th Amendments. Well, a recent report in the Wall Street Journal finds the world is at an alarming tipping point when it comes to birth rates, and it could have serious economic and geopolitical consequences. The report says birth rates are dropping nearly everywhere. This is especially true in high-income countries such as the U.S., where the CDC reported fertility rates in 2023 dropped to a historic low, all of this causing concern that the global replacement rate is in jeopardy. And here to talk about this and more is Nadine Menza, the former chair of USERF and an advocate for international religious freedom and working family policies. Nadine, great to be with you as always.
Thank you.
This is really concerning information about birth rates. What do you think is behind the declining numbers, both domestically and globally?
Well, I think culturally we're in a situation where we want families, but are we creating communities that are welcoming to families? And currently in the United States, it's 40% of Americans cannot afford a $400 emergency. So, of course, a new child is a financial catastrophe, you know, for some families. And the economy has changed. We used to be able to raise families on one income. And now we have two incomes. We have higher costs. We have inflation. And having children is expensive. As you mentioned, the birth rate in the United States is the lowest it's ever been recorded at 1.64 live births per woman, last I heard. And we need, of course, a rate of 2.1 women per child in order to maintain our population. But if you ask women how many children they want to have 2.7 children. So women in America aren't having the amount of children that they want to have, partly because of the cost and because there aren't the kind of programs, things like what I've been working hard for is paid family leave after the birth or adoption of a child, to be able to spend those first few months together, bonding as a family without worrying about losing the house because you can't make rent.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about that before. Where are you right now with that plan? And also, like, talk a little bit more about how important that is for families.
Yeah, so the good news is there is bipartisan working groups in both the House and the Senate, conservative, liberal, moderate, all coming together and saying this isn't a partisan issue. Families are more important. They're sacred. We all need to be working together. So we're really hopeful that even this year there perhaps could be some sort of bipartisan plan to help families. So much data shows the need for paid family leave after the birth or adoption of a child. Currently, about a quarter of all women go back to work within 10 to 14 days after having a child, often doing labor service type, food service and others, retail, only 23% of people have paid leave available through their work, and also 9% of low-income workers have access to it. So you have all these folks that end up having to go back to work right away, and what that means for children, the data is staggering in support of having that important time together for moms, fathers, and babies.
Yeah, so important. Almost out of time. But Nadine, what else, you know, can we do to support those who want to have children? Other ways maybe the government can be a little bit more involved, things like maybe financial incentives.
Exactly. Child tax credit is a huge one. You know, increasing it for lower age children, there's all sorts of conservative support right now for increasing the child tax credit. It was increased in the under the tax plan that the Trump administration passed. There's even talk that Biden is now prepared to continue to support those child tax credits. That's a great way to incentivize families. You know, there's ways that we can look at how child care could be more effective and more cost effective for families. And really, you know, if we had a way of looking at government, now, as a conservative, I don't want to grow government. The idea isn't to grow government, but let's be smart about government supporting families. What could it mean if every mother and father and child had that time together and didn't have those kind of pressures to go right back to work after a child was born? What if every family started off bonded like that? You know, studies show that when fathers are home those first, you know, few weeks, they actually produce the same hormone women produce when they're breastfeeding and after having a child, this oxytocin that actually, it's like a love hormone, and they become bonded to this child. And then other studies show that fathers that were home those first few weeks stay involved in the child's care, and that children do better academically, they do better all the way around when their fathers are part of their lives. So study after study shows that this time together, that supporting families, that trying to craft policies that actually make it easier for people to have children, is benefits society and benefits each one of these lives, including, of course, the mental health of mothers and fathers as well. Everyone wins. It does take a little bit of time, and it's a different way of looking at things. We have a resource. A whole lot of conservative groups came together, including Patriot Voices, Students for Life, American Principles Project, a whole bunch of them, and we're part of it. It's called paidleaveforfamilies.com, and it has all of these facts. It has a legislative briefing book, and it kind of helps explain why this particular policy we're such a fan of, but also child tax credit and other plans, ways of supporting families so that, you know, we can all grow together strongly, and what that means for society. And when families are strong, you need less government involved. And so, you know, no matter what people's income levels, they should have the right to be able to start their families off strong.
Yeah, we're going to leave it right there. Nadine, thank you so much. Always great to be with you, and wonderful insights as always. Thank you. God bless.
I so appreciate you covering this important topic. Thank you.
Up next, a swimming instructor in Lebanon makes an appeal to the ultimate lifeguard. We'll explain. For the second year in a row, pilgrims at the Vatican are taking advantage of a special offer. During the month of May, the Vatican Museums are opening the botanical and artistic marvels of the Pope's garden. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has more.
She always leads us to greater devotion. She always leads us to the truth. And so when we travel through the Vatican gardens, that's what we see. We see the embrace of a mother who loves us, who calls us back to God.
Throughout the Marian month of May, the Vatican Gardens are opening its gates to the pilgrims from around the world for a special tour in honor of the Blessed Mother. Created last year in collaboration with the Vatican Museums, the pilgrimage titled May with Mary includes 10 stops at some of the most important images and statues of the Madonna in the gardens. Offered every Wednesday and Saturday, the visit led by Sister Emanuela Edwards allows pilgrims to immerse themselves in the beauty of the Vatican Gardens by walking through the various Marian images found throughout the Vatican's beautiful grounds.
Through our trip, we will meet some of the most important shrines to Our Lady. For example, the Grotto of Lourdes, the image of Our Lady of Fatima, the Madonna of Guadalupe. So we see some of the most important images, but also there are images from all over the world. And so we find also in the garden devotions from Latin America, from the Philippines. What can we say? It's international.
The Marian grottoes, frescoes and statues featured in the May with Mary tour are connected to the devotion of people across the globe who have turned to the Queen of Peace in times of war and struggle to invoke peace. For this reason, the pilgrims stop at each Marian shrine, to pray for this very same intention.
Given the state of our world today and the call from our Holy Father being so incessant for peace, this year we've decided to offer this mini pilgrimage for peace. And so at each sanctuary of Our Lady, we say a Hail Mary for the intention of peace. And throughout the visit, I underline the places where Our Lady has intervened in the story of humanity to bring about peace.
As the pilgrims walk through the Vatican Gardens, where past popes like St. John Paul II and Benedict XVI would often take their daily walks for moments of quiet and prayer, the blossoming nature of the garden serves as a beautiful reminder of why the month of May is the month of Mary. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
Finally tonight, a Catholic swimming instructor in Lebanon has brought the faith to the seas. Joe Abdel Sadr built a giant rosary that floats in the Mediterranean. It was created on the Feast of Our Lady of the Seas, and it stretches more than 300 feet. It is composed of white and blue plastic jugs and tied together with rope. Local parish priest said the beads of the rosary represent the community binding together through life's crashing waves. That is so beautiful. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.